This is CliffCentral.com.
All right. That is a little bit of Jason Derulo. If this ain't love. Very nice. Okay, it's just after 7 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. We've got a busy day ahead of us today. There's lots to catch up on in terms of news, storm updates, crazy weather. I feel sorry for everybody at the moment because Durban has got way too much water. Cape Town has got way too little water. Joburg has much too much wind and water. It's kind of a mess.
I actually didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Cape Town must really hate the rest of us. Hey?
Well, I don't know why we can't just build some huge pipe from Durban to Cape Town.
Exactly.
To just help them get some water into their system because it's not working.
You could do it from Joburg because it would be downhill.
I think it would be downhill from Durban as well, wouldn't it? Oh, no, it's both sea level.
Pretty much sea level, yeah. What they could do is divert their water into the sea. It would raise the sea level so there's more sea in
and
Cape Town as well.
And
then they could take it out of the sea.
Oh, just tilt the...
I could qualify for like a cabinet ministership or of environmental solutions.
All right.
Spend $1 billion diverting the water into the ocean and retrieving it again.
Let's get into a little bit of news. Mubs, what do you got for us?
Okay, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, let's deal with this.
So his British wife has announced that she is leaving him as Gwyneth Paltrow and Angelina Jolie now also join a growing list of women who are accusing the movie mogul of sexual harassment. That would be fashion designer Georgina Chapman, who made the announcement as the 65-year-old Hollywood producer was accused of rape by three other women in an expose in the New Yorker magazine. So she had kept quiet for about a week, and then she's revealed to People magazine that, nope, the decision has been taken. She is packing up her shit, and she is leaving him.
Well, I feel bad for her because she's obviously been in this mess, and she's known what kind of a monster she was married to, and this has probably given her the excuse to get away because a guy like that, he sounds like he used his power and money to get whatever he wanted out of women who he was sexually moving in on. But also, he would have done the same thing to his wife. I mean, the fact that she's jumping ship now isn't because she's trying to save herself. It's probably because she's finally seen that he's distracted by all of this other stuff, that she's not going to be victimized by him like all the other women would have been.
She can
get out. And
it's like it's diabolically evil clever because his thing has always been that he's a dickhead. He like wears it on his sleeve. He has famous sort of somewhat amusing but also quite like outraged temper tantrums.
Yeah, he was the Hollywood producer of producers. He's that kind of guy that you can't believe that a person, a caricature like this actually exists.
Yeah, he was an ongoing character playing himself in that old TV series Entourage.
Correct.
And everyone was scared of him because if you pissed him off, he would ruin Hollywood.
Yeah,
and he would just like lay
You'll
into you.
You'll never work in this town again.
And they always had him on the phone and they'd give him bad news and he'd have like... So it's almost like... It's like you're this nice guy and you're doing something terrible and it shocks everybody and like, oh my God, how could it possibly be? But if you're a like... overt, proud dickhead, it's almost like people won't suspect you. It's a good smokescreen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, it worked for a while. But like so many things in the world, eventually you can't cover up everything no matter how rich and powerful you are.
Exactly.
And now, of course, there's an avalanche. You know, it started with Cosby with one woman as well. There was one story that got published. And by the way, there have been journalists who've been publishing stuff and who've been warning us about Harvey Weinstein for years. And no one took them seriously because everyone was so scared of him. And because people wanted jobs. It's the same way as the president in this country ought to realize that sooner or later, the people who want to hold on to their jobs are going to realize that holding on to their jobs at the cost of keeping him afloat is just too high a price to pay. So eventually you reach a point with Harvey Weinstein or with Jacob Zuma or with Vladimir Putin or all these other people who use power and money to make everyone else do what they need them to do. Mm. There is a breaking point. There's a point of critical mass where people just decide, enough.
And it's almost like people who've got like so much and so much access to so much and so much money, etc. It's like the only thing left to be kind of drawn toward or fixated upon is stuff you can't have. Like, you can't just have whoever you want in terms of people. Oh, yeah. Yes,
because,
I can.
Because they're not used to getting no.
Yeah, and also there's nothing left to say no to them.
That's right. Really they get bored. That.
Yeah.
They spend their money on whatever they want, so they have endless amounts of material happiness in terms of things.
Yeah.
Then they spend their money on experiences, which include holidays and, you know, kind of taking the kids somewhere exciting they've never been before. And then it gets escalated and escalated until eventually you're on yacht parties in Dubai. And at some point that even becomes boring. So yeah, you start to exert your power and your magisterium even further,
yeah,
until you eventually have actresses who want to be in movies on the casting couch.
I can force you to do. I've got the power to force you to do.
And you're unzipping
something.
Your fly while that actress is lying there going, "This is my big break."
Did you hear the hidden camera, the hidden microphone, cell phone, whatever recording of the Italian actress that actually recorded him?
No.
It was on the news. I was at the gym yesterday and just like watching. I think it was CNN, could have been Sky, but I'm pretty sure it was CNN. And they, this Italian actress who was cast for a part, she had. I stand to be corrected, but I think what he made her do was a massage, mm-hmm, and she was super uncomfortable about it, and she like expressed that she was uncomfortable, and he said, "No, you got to come see me again at the hotel room tomorrow."
Oh,
she went
dude.
There. She protested. She was upset about what happened yesterday. He was like, "Sorry, sorry, it won't happen again, but you have to come inside." She's like, "Why did you touch my breast?" And he's like, "I'm sorry about that. It won't happen again, but you got to come inside. Please just come inside. You're making a scene. Come into the hotel room." And she recorded the whole thing, and it was so creepy.
Yeah, hotel rooms were definitely his go-to place when it came to unleashing his creep behavior. A few days ago, Ashley Judd recounted an episode where she had been called to his hotel room, and she said that once she got there, he derobed in front of her, and he asked her for the same thing, for a massage. Gwyneth Paltrow's encounter is also very similar. She was 22 years old at the time. And she was also summoned to his suite at the Peninsula Beverly Hills Hotel for what he called a work meeting. But when she got there, he also asked her for a massage. Angelina Jolie also sharing an episode where he had made unwanted advances at her in a hotel room. And this was during the release of Playing by Heart in the late 90s. She rejected him. And she said that ever since that incident, she had decided that she wasn't going to work with him at all. And she had then went on to warn other actresses when she found out that, "Are you working with Harvey Weinstein?" And she would tell them about her episode and just warn them and say, "Listen,
apparently,
be careful of this guy. He's a bit of a dodgy character."
Brad also was one of the few people who stood up to him and said, you will not make these moves on X and Y women.
Yes, because what happened was after that incident with Gwyneth Paltrow, she was dating Brad Pitt at the time. And so she confided in him after that episode.
Oh.
So he then told him that, you know, you will never touch her again.
It's so sketchy, though. It's like, okay, so hotels are his vibe. But hotels typically are designed to have, like, meeting facilities. They'll have, like, a bar, a restaurant, a conference room. Like, mm-hmm. If you're having a proper professional work meeting about
it. You don't have it in the room, bedroom.
Like, hotels, it's like, if someone comes to you, if somebody has you over to their apartment, it's like, okay, you're inside an apartment. Now you're in a potential pretty high, like, creep potential facility. A hotel has got many places where you can have a private, comfortable meeting that aren't the bedroom.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, you're 22 years old, you're an up-and-coming actress, it's Hollywood, they get to make their own
rules. Imagine having to massage that creep.
I mean, he is exceptionally gross. He's a gross-looking man.
He's a gross-looking dude, and I bet you he has, like, the shoulder hair. You see these guys.
I have a bit of shoulder hair.
You see those guys in the locker room at the gym. I'm sorry, Gord, get rid of it.
You're not Harvey Weinstein. Calm down.
You see these guys in the locker room at the gym, and they're walking around proudly, and they've just, no one's ever cared about them enough to say to them, "Let me help you get rid of that shoulder hair." These sad Cro-Magnon men.
I had curly matted back and shoulder hair, and I had it lasered repeatedly, and it no longer. It's now just the occasional. Survivor. Like, what will happen when the asteroid hits? Small bands of survivors.
Well, you want to hear what Trump had to say?
I want to take you straight to Washington, D.C., because just moments ago, President Trump spoke to reporters outside the White House, and correspondent Ryan Nobles is joining us with what he had to say. Ryan, fill us in.
Yeah, Anna, the president is headed to North Carolina right now for a fundraiser to support the RNC. But on his way to Marine One, he had quite a bit to say on a number of different topics. The president talking about North Korea, talking about health care. He talked about Harvey Weinstein and the Access Hollywood tape. I asked him specifically about his relationship with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and his chief of staff, John Kelly. It was only about 5 minutes, but it covered a lot of ground. Here's the entire exchange.
Well, if we could make a deal, at least on a temporary basis, because Obamacare is exploding, it's gone. The premiums are through the roof, you see what's happening. So if we could make a temporary deal, because ultimately we're going to have it back to the states, we're going to block rent back to the states. But if we made a temporary deal, I think it would be a great thing for people, but it's really up to them. Obamacare is a disaster. The numbers are out. It's exploding like I said it would. So basically, if we could do a one-year deal or a two-year deal as a temporary measure, you'll have block granting ultimately to the states, which is what the Republicans want. That really is a repeal and replace.
Can you clarify your calm before the storm comes?
Nothing. Right, on Harvey Weinstein for a long
time. There we go. This is the part that I wanted to
hear. On Harvey Weinstein for a long time, I'm not at all surprised to see it.
Whoa.
John Kelly is one of the best people.
All right, that was all he said. I've known Harvey Weinstein a long time. I'm not at all surprised.
Now, if President Donald grab her by the you-know-what,
yeah.
Trump says, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Then you know there's no way to recover from that at all. And now also the Obamas have spoken out about this. And at first I was like, this is arbitrary. Why do they have
to speak? Well, the Obamas and Hillary didn't say anything for a long time. They were recipients of major donations from
exactly.
Harvey
Weinstein. He's a Democratic donor, one of the major ones. But on top of that, the Obamas' 19-year-old daughter, Malia, interned. Interned for the Weinstein company. So they're just like, listen, they're disgusted by this. Any man who demeans and degrades women in such fashion needs to be condemned and held accountable. So yeah, all we've heard from the Weinstein camp is that they say any allegations of non-consensual sex are unequivocally denied by Mr. Weinstein. And then on top of that, they've said something along the lines of Mr. Weinstein has begun counseling, hoping that if
He left the country. He's fled to Europe, like Roman Polanski did.
And because he has the means.
But they
money,
fired him, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't they push him out of the company?
Yeah, pretty much immediately.
But listen, like, he now has the Weinstein company with his brother. But before that, they actually started Miramax, which is like massive. And they named it after their parents, Mira and Max.
Yeah.
And they sold that for like millions and millions. So he's fine.
So Max,
he's fine.
Is it just... Because you said something very disturbing. Is it underage girls as well?
I'll need to try and find that exact story before I start talking out of...
I saw a tweet from a political commentator who said Harvey Weinstein's biggest mistake was not doing this because all these producers in Hollywood do it, but doing it with adults instead of with children because the ones with children get away with it.
Who's that sketchy BBC dude? He was Piers super Morgan. Famous and he died.
Jimmy Savile.
That's it, Jimmy Savile. They found out that like all these accusations that had been dismissed for decades turned out to be true. And it was like dozens, if not hundreds
of people.
I got to
tell you, the entertainment industry is terrifying.
Slimy.
In America in particular, there's so many of these stories that you hear about that are rumors that end up being true later on. I mean, look at the Cosby story. Look at this Weinstein story. You hear these things and you think, can't be true. It is.
Well, I had to go to Dubai with Gareth repeatedly to land this gig.
Exactly.
So, just between us, let's keep it between us. Do you think Ben might be right then?
About this child sex ring?
No, but more than that, like the Tupac.
No, definitely not.
Thing.
No, not the Tupac.
What if? What if?
No, he doesn't know.
I missed the background info on this, but I'm just going to come out and say he's probably not right. What did he say?
His theory is that Will Smith is the one responsible for taking out Tupac.
He also player hates on Elon Musk. So
yeah,
let's take that with a pinch of salt.
All right. What else is in the news?
Okay, so back home then it is. So the police minister, Fikile Mbalula, yesterday denying that a trip that he and his family took to Dubai constituted a sponsorship or represented a conflict of interest. He was responding to media reports that he, as then Minister of Sports and Recreation, had received a travel sponsorship worth 680,000 rand from SASCOC. The minister.
Do you think he knows what a conflict of interest is? Do you think he knows what a sponsorship means?
He's not concerned.
He spoke through a statement, so of course it was carefully orchestrated. The minister admits that he and his family traveled abroad on the dates that are suggested in the news report, but he denies that he received a sponsorship, that he received gifts or gratitudes for the said private family trip. Also contained in the statement were the following. Insofar as members' ethics are concerned, the minister has and had no direct conflict of interest arising from the trip. Hmm. The statement also says that these allegations have been orchestrated to basically discredit the minister and deliberately cause him and his family harm in this regard. So deny, deny, deny until you die. But I mean, that is an unwritten rule for almost anything in life. If you get caught stealing, deny. If you get caught murdering someone, deny. If you get caught cheating, deny. So that is an unwritten rule in every facet of life. Deny, deny, deny. And that's exactly what Fikile Mbalula has done. He has denied any wrongdoing here.
How much was the trip?
They said that he was sponsored up to 680,000 rand.
What do you do for 680,000 rand on a holiday?
I've never had a holiday that even came close to 680,000 rand. That's insane.
I'm like planning a visit to Europe at the beginning of January, and like I'm looking at, holy shit, this is going to be pretty expensive. It's 2 weeks. It's not even 10% of that. It's like how would you spend that much?
Well, he doesn't know because he's never had to earn a single cent of his own money.
But what can you eat?
He has no idea.
What can you
eat? I'll have the coelacanth with rhino horns.
Exactly.
Tiger penis.
Ian, what's up?
How's it, buddy?
Hey, man. Cool. Go ahead.
Good, man. I got a couple of stories for you, actually. I got a mate who dropped 680 on a holiday. Now that you're talking about that, they took their kids to see the Northern Lights and Centaurs, or there's a Christmas town somewhere.
Yes.
And then they decided while they're there, they're going to go and ski in Italy. And when he came back, I said to him, "Aren't you visiting me in Cape Town?" He said, "No, but I dropped 680, but I can't come down. I spent the budget."
Yeah. Wow, some budget. I wouldn't mind that. All right.
Yeah. That's and then the other thing is, I lived in LA, and I had a couple of guys. I worked for Madonna's brother in a restaurant.
So I remember, Ian. You've told us some of your stories before. Right, do you ever meet Weinstein?
No, I never saw him, man. But I met a couple of dodgies there. The one guy came in there and he gave me his card. He said, "I'm gonna hook you up. Come see me." And then I went. It was a really good office in Sunset Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Went through. He said, "Come at about one." I went in at one, and there was not a person. And it was a big office, not a person in. And I went, "Hello, hello, is anyone here?" And then I heard a voice down at the bottom office going, "Come down here." So I said, "Oh, okay." Straight away, you get that knot in your stomach. Mm-hmm. So I ducked down, I get down, he said, "Oh, have a seat, did you bring your book?" So I said, yeah. So he paid to it, and he's like, "Oh, you need more body shots?" And I said, no, I'm going to do them. My agency's already
said this was, you were modelling, because I was wondering what your book was. I thought you'd written a novel.
My book, So the guy says, "But you know what, like, don't you want to come hang out with me?" So I said, what do you mean, I said, no, because there's a very prestigious gym in LA called the LA Gym, and it's like all the famous people go to this gym,
Right.
So he says, "I'll give you comps, and you come train with me, and, we can train together, and then we can go for walks on the beach and stuff." And I said, "But there's your family behind you, He says, no, just friends. We just hang out, it's like cool stuff, just go out for dinner and hang out." So I looked at him and said, "Dad, are you nuts? What's wrong with you, I was like, "No, it's just going to be friends, and I'll give you comps to the gym, man. It'll be awesome." No way. And then I walked out. I said, "No, I don't trust you." And then I walked out there. And then the next time I was walking down the road, and some photographer gave me his card. He said, "Look, you're a photo shoot." So I said, "Okay." I said, "It's So I said to him, are you dodgy, you know? So he said, no, I do all the...
Because a dodgy person's always going to own up, Ian. They're always going to go, yes, yes, yeah. Foiled again.
Why, yes, I'm so glad that you asked.
I went and looked him up, and he's actually, like, really famous. He does all the stars, like, all the soapy. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, look, I do soap stars, but I want to do... You know, I want to start getting into more into like fashion and open the gates a bit. I said, I looked him up and he was everywhere. So I went to the next week. I said, come to my studio. It's at my house in West Hollywood. So I said, that's a cool. Uh-huh. Got to his place, went up to back on the penthouse. So he's like, he's earning some back. So I get in there and he's like, looks at my book and he says, yeah, can we do body shots? So I was like, every second I was to do body shots. So I was like, okay, cool. We'll do some. I got down into my undies and I was, you know, posing up and everything. And then he said, oh, yeah, could you just, like, drop your undies a little bit on the one side? So I said, okay. And then if you drop them a little lower, then it actually looks like you're naked. It'll be cool. So I pull it a little bit. Mm-hmm. He goes, just a little bit more. So he was shooting me from behind. And I turned around. And the guy was shaking. The camera was actually physically shaking. So I said, what the fuck wrong with you, dude? Like, this is like wrong, eh? He said, no, I'm just a bit nervous. I said, what? Are you okay? And I went off on him, eh? And then I just grabbed my shit and I left. But he's sicker and get in there.
Wow. And that wasn't even Harvey Weinstein.
Ian, hold up. Tell me, before you packed your things up, you also got like the film or the something or the...
No, he found me the next day. He said, listen, come see your shots. That's brilliant. And he gave it to me and they were actually quite good. But the greasiest story ever. I'm at the restaurant. I'm waitering there and everything. And this guy comes in. It was a couple called Leslie and Dave or something like that. And they used to come all the time. They used to always ask for me, and I used to always serve them. And they said, "Yeah, come to Canada. You must meet our daughter and everything." And stuff like that. I think I told you the story before. And so his wife said to him, she got up to go to the restroom, and she said to him, "Dave, give me your card. I want you to come meet Lily," or whatever her name was. I said, she went up and went to the restroom, so he gives me his card, so I grab it, and I was like, oh, are you a movie producer, which everyone is? He goes, no, give me the card back. So I take the card back, he gives me, like, Dave's carpet team. I said, aren't you a movie producer? He said, no.
Wow, so they all bullshit that they're movie producers.
Yeah, they just, because the girls, like, when you give them a card, they go, goo-goo, you know, they go,
yeah. Well, you see, you bring up something interesting, Ian. We all, people like me who don't look great, who haven't got a book.
You handsome as damn.
Listen to this. Yeah. We always wonder how wonderful it would be to be really good looking. But look at the pitfalls and the perils of being good looking. You get kind of sequestered into these dodgy spaces by people who want to take naked photographs of you. Bad things happen to good-looking people, right, Ian?
Yeah, we got to deal with these things, Gareth. Well, it's not anymore, but...
Well, because you're not pretty anymore, but you used to be, and then it used to be a problem.
No, you know, it's the hardships of it, Gareth.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
I feel your pain, dude. It must be awful.
People just want
to
shine.
No one's ever invited me into a room and asked me to get naked so they could take pictures of me. Ever.
I have, but no. You said no.
I wish. All right, so thank you. All right, there's this very sad stories from... isn't that sad?
I'm just envisioning, though, the one guy with the empty office, and he's like, I don't know what happened. I still don't have any mates. No one works in my office. I still don't have a gym partner. No. I just wanted to be bros with that guy, and he would have been perfect for the new Ben Affleck movie. Like, I don't get it. Why don't people want to be my China?
There's nothing wrong. Maybe I'm not great socially.
Do you know how exclusive that gym is? I don't know what else to offer.
What do you do?
Well, this is where Harvey Weinstein would have done, you see. He would have had all the perks and the benefits available to hand out to all of these girls.
That man has no perks, depending on what you mean.
No, what I mean is that he would have been able to say to them, you know, you could stay at the Beverly Hilton, or here's the membership to this and that club, and let me introduce you to this actress. Let me get you a bit part in this TV show. Because he had major power. The guy was a very powerful man in Hollywood. Mm. Just shows you how influence can be peddled for good or for bad.
Yeah, but I've watched enough Crime and Investigation Channel to know if you walk into an office and it's all empty and there's just one person, hightail it out of there.
Right.
Damn it, that's awkward.
All right, let's get into one or two other things before we meet our guest for this morning. The terrific Alon Reyes. He runs Reyes Corp, which we'll tell you about in a short while. He's a tremendously successful entrepreneur. He's built numerous businesses, and he's happy to talk about the ones that are successful, and he's even happy to talk about the ones that aren't, because that's the real business of an entrepreneur, is taking a chance on the things that you believe in and making sure that they're as good as can possibly be. But occasionally you're going to find one or two duds, and you've got to be honest about them, because a lot of people who tell you that they've always been successful are just lying to you.
True.
Alon has founded this business called Reyes Corp, which nurtures and grows entrepreneurs and helps them to build their businesses and make them profitable. So he's the kind of person that we need to talk to a lot more. And I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get him into the studio. We'll talk to him in the next while. What else do we need to know, Mubs?
Can I give you guys, though, just quickly a very twisted story?
Another one. Haven't we had enough twisted stories?
As if we really haven't had enough today. But all right, listen to this. A 60-year-old man was charged last week by police in Minnesota, with interference with a dead body or scene of death, which is a misdemeanor. You know why? Because he lived with the decaying bodies of his dead mother and twin brother for more than a year.
Where and how did he have them stored?
Oh, this
exactly what I was going to ask.
This is weird. So this all actually came to light last year in September, but now this happened last year in September, but now we're actually hearing of it. And the thing is, his neighbors started actually reporting him to the police because they just said there's this foul stench in the air and it's coming from that property. So now police had to go and investigate, and they found the skeletal remains of his mother, Evelyn, in an upstairs bedroom.
Was she just sitting there, or was she lying in the bed?
In the bed.
Oy.
And the mummified corpse of his twin brother, Richard, in the basement. Now, autopsies on the bodies, it gets weirder, shows that both died of natural causes. So the brother died back in July, and his mother a month later. So he actually says, no, I didn't kill them. When they died, I was just traumatized and didn't know what to do, so I just left them there. The only thing that he did admit to doing is that his brother died while in a chair.
Mm.
And he just eventually moved the body to the bathroom because it was in the way.
I wouldn't know how to walk into a room where there's a dead person.
Yeah.
This is
for a whole year, you just walk into the room. Hey, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
Open the curtains, yep, for her.
Listen, he even sent out Christmas cards saying that his brother and his mom were in bad health and didn't want any visitors or phone calls.
Right, but like, this was right about that.
But like, and now though, like, the mother and the brother used to get social security checks in the mail.
I bet you were still cashing those.
No. Police have found out that all of this money is just sitting in bank accounts and he hasn't touched it at all, which could actually prove that he genuinely has been traumatized.
Just didn't know what to do.
This is weird.
I mean, there's levels of freaking out. Now, your mom and your twin brother both die in the short space of time. Something in your brain could literally just snap and you're like, that's it, I can't cope with reality anymore. Me and the Smurfs are going to sit with Mom and Ricky, whatever.
But now, if the neighbors were complaining about the smell, how was he dealing with living in that smell, walking into it,
you get
sleeping
used to a
through
smell.
It?
You
through
get
the
used
trauma,
to
maybe in his head, through the trauma, like he didn't actually smell that anymore. But to live for a year with corpses in the exact...
Well, I mean, if she died in her bedroom... Mm-hmm. He could have easily just shut the door and never opened that door ever again. So it's not like every day he came home, you know, he'd walk past the bedroom door and see her there like, oh, hey, Ma. Mm. Like, he just closed the door and avoid that whole situation. Where was the brother found? In the basement? Don't go to the basement anymore.
He was in a
anymore.
Chair and then he moved into
was
the
found,
basement.
In a chair, but then moved.
Because he was in the way.
But you do become desensitized to smells, but there's got to be a level at which you're not anymore.
Well, you have an instinctive predisposition against the smell of rotten meat because
Shakespeare is dead.
Because it's meant to put you off. It's bad for your gut.
Yeah, and it also means things are dying around here.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a warning bell. Yeah.
So even I mean, the most basic of creatures know that certain things are not for eating and not for keeping around. Anyway, here are a couple of messages before we get to Alon. Ashley says, this razzmatazz is so full of BS. Zapiro called him out on the trip and asked who paid, and he replied that no taxpayers paid. That wasn't the question. We know taxpayers didn't pay. Who did? And Quest says, when I used to live in Dubai, I also heard about these parties and private yachts involving drugs, sex, and other things. Princes would hire escorts or cabin crew at big bucks to do things like shit on glass ceilings in yachts while the guy underneath admired the work from below. What kind of people? Yeah. This is what they do in Dubai for fun.
Yeah.
And this comes at you. Well, Mubs, you hit the nail on the head then.
I've got all the Ferraris. What's next? Well, I've tried something recently that was fun. Hmm.
Gord sounds very sexy when he talks about astronomy. Keep him doing that. The figures from SIA show the importance of vaccinations. And anyone who doesn't vaccinate their kids should be held liable for outbreaks and other people dying. Vaughn, that's a very good point. That includes that Jenny McCarthy, who seems to think that all vaccinations create autism in children.
Yes, but that's a crock of bullshit that gets my back up badly.
Because you can take out things like polio was very nearly completely eradicated. And then a bunch of lunatics started some rumor in Pakistan that polio was a way to create like a sort of artificial birth control among, you know, certain rural populations. And that spread like wildfire, and soon polio was back at full throttle in that part of the world.
Vaccines cause autism. It's like, well, here's 10,000 peer-reviewed scientific journal articles where 10,000 different scientists all completely agree. But here's one by a Scientologist who was later discredited, and Jenny McCarthy's blog, that say that this thing causes autism. Therefore, I choose to believe that. But it's not just let your own children become vulnerable to these illnesses. You put other people's children at risk because now your kids can be carriers. Mm. So I'm going to decide for everyone whether they should have a chance or not to get a fatal disease.
Right.
Piss off.
Totally irresponsible. And then someone says Ben sounded like he was drunk. Well, he was high.
High on anti-inflammatories.
Yeah. And muscle relaxants. And there is no such thing as a malaria vaccine. For those people who are wondering, so it's not, there isn't a vaccine, but there are things that you can do to prevent malaria, which involve you not being stung by mosquitoes.
That I'd sting you, dude.
Yeah. When we come back, I bite you. And then they have some kind of bacterium in their saliva, which is what the actual cause of malaria is. Mm. And the Anopheles mosquito only conducts that bacteria in their saliva. It's like a blood thinner as well. All right. Alon Reyes is coming up next. We're going to speak to him about entrepreneurship. We're going to talk about the most interesting things that he's got up to in business. And we may just start some kind of a conversation around you and your great ideas. If you think that it's time for you to become the person that you've always known you had the potential to become in business, maybe Alon has some advice for you, and maybe there are ways that you can get ahead, things that you can do to start making your dreams become a reality. That'll all be what we discuss with Alon Reyes next, cliffcentral.com. Going up towards 8 o'clock. All right, Dirty Harry, the Gorillaz. Just getting us in the mood for a Wednesday. It's 22:08. Alon Reyes is here, and we're going to chat to him about starting your own business, getting your own business going, incubating the best businesses, what the tricks and the lessons of the trade are. You know, there's so many people in this country who, and we hear these discussions over and over again, have great ideas. And they want to turn these great ideas into great businesses. There's never a perfect time. There's never a perfect set of circumstances. There's never a perfect environment. You can complain about the economy. You can complain about the government. You can complain about Forex. You can complain about anything you like. But if you really have a good idea, there's no better time than right now.
Yeah.
Is that about right? How are you, Alon? Nice to see you, man.
Good morning. Morning.
Good.
Yeah, so the answer is yes, but it depends. I sound like a politician now because it depends on, I think, five things need to be in place. And I base this on that whole story, are entrepreneurs born or made? It's neither. It's based on five things. Entrepreneurs precipitate, and that's an important differential between do I have it innate in me or do I learn it. You precipitate with five conditions present. Number one, you have to see an opportunity or crisis happens. It's present in every single entrepreneurial story. Number two, you have to have a tolerance for pain. Okay, mm-hmm. That constant rejection. And at different parts of our lives, we have different levels of tolerance for pain. And that's generally based on our self-confidence, etc. Number three, you have to have a tolerance for risk. And so people at different parts of their life have different levels of risk tolerance. A 23-year-old has a higher tolerance for risk than a 45-year-old with two kids in a private school and a bond. Yeah. Then there is your ability to... these words are very important. Your belief in your ability to master resources. Not your ability to master resources. Your belief that you can master those resources like capital, etc. And finally, the fifth thing that needs to be present is your ability to learn and iterate. To actually apply any learning, in particularly when in that time of rejection, into your model. When those are present, you precipitate.
Now, you've seen, because your business is incubating businesses now.
Yeah,
and Race Corp is the place that people go to,
yeah,
when they need to take things up a level.
Yeah, so we've been doing this for 17 years. I've had over 10,000 businesses come through Race Corp in that period. Currently, we're incubating over 500 right now.
Wow,
and we have anywhere between 40 and 100 applications a day to join us. And we have to go through a sifting process to where we identify people with what we call blue heart, that ability to stand up again and again and again. So we have quite a, I don't want to use the word sophisticated, but I don't have an alternative word, process that tries to identify the entrepreneurs that are ready to precipitate or have precipitated. Mm-hmm. Because many people who apply are not ready for that. And in fact, by putting them into a program, you're doing them a disservice. Because if you look at South Africa, we have what we call the reentry rate. In other words, entrepreneurs that try, fail, and then try again. Mm-hmm. If you look at South Africa, it's just over one time. 1.1 is the number. You look at the U.S., it's 3.6 times. In the U.S., you'll try 3.6 times at entrepreneurship before you give up. In South Africa, it's 1.1. So we need to be responsible in saying to somebody who applies and say, listen, you're not ready right now. We don't believe you're ready, particularly for our program. Come back in 6 months.
Because they might not have the ability to do it a second or a third time. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and so I don't want to damage them.
Yeah, you have to cotton wool them a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they might be brilliant. They might have a great idea, but their timing might be off. They might not have thought certain things through. They might not have the right structures in place. They might not have funding. All of that stuff might have to do with it.
Those, to me, are the... let's call it the external factors, which are quite easy to plug in. To me, it's more about their internal internal being, who they are at that time. Because what's ironically, South Africa has done a phenomenal job of promoting entrepreneurship, and entrepreneurs are seen as almost celebs now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's everybody's favorite buzzword.
So the unintended consequence of that is a lot of people going, oh, I can start a business and I just add water and then I'm become a millionaire, right? and that's not true. It's a hard slog and 96% of people who apply will fail. So we need to be very sure that we're responsible around this. And I'm particularly passionate about not damaging people's self-belief. And when people do something at the wrong time, it damages your self-belief. And that's really what I'm always cautious about, bringing somebody before they're ready to become successful. And some people are overripe as well. You know, they've been trying too often. And then what happens is they sort of crystallize in their head why they have failed and why they're not doing well. And that becomes their reality.
It becomes an impediment to future success.
Yeah.
Now, for a lot of people who aren't aware of your story, I mean, it's amazing to me that there are excuses everywhere for how many people shouldn't succeed. Mm. And yet there are those people who kind of break through the noise and make it happen. Mm. And you talk about putting 500 businesses in at the moment.
Right now, yeah.
That are going through the systems there. It's an incredible operation. I went and saw what Alon is up to at Race Corp. And the kinds of – you do everything from tiny, tiny little businesses where they're selling goods – small amounts of this and that to massive corporations that need to iterate to the next level to take things up, to accelerate forward, to take on that massive growth curve. Do you personally take joy and excitement and kind of nachas and happiness out of this? Is that what keeps you as interested as you are? You're so passionate about this stuff.
Yeah. Well, my personal story is that somebody in my 20s gave me a second chance. I got invested in as a young man by a dollar billionaire. I failed. And
what was the business?
It was called the New York Sausage Factory. It was a fast food operation. I was the first guy to basically formalize the hot dog industry at the age of 23. And I opened up in Pinetown just outside of Durban, and I did 580 rand and 20 cents turnover on my first day. And the reason I remember that is the most amount of money I ever made out of that business. I failed miserably, and I couldn't get that going. I went to my investor, and I sort of very dramatically said to him, I'll pay you back. He had invested some money. And he said, sit down. It was a deep, booming voice. He should have been on radio.
Yeah.
And he said, did I back you or did I back the business? And I said, you backed me. He says, right now the business has failed. If you get up and go out, walk out this door, you've failed. But what are you going to do differently next time? And then I gave him a whole list of things that I'd do. And he said, okay, this time I'm going to back you a second time, and I'm not giving you money. I'm giving you people. And he gave me the person I call Negative Ned, who's the financial guy, okay, and he became effectively my finance guy. He gave me a CEO of a marketing business in Durban, and he became my marketing guide, and he put this team of people around me. And as a young entrepreneur, I didn't have the experience that they had had, and it was through their guidance that I built set up the second time, and that became a success. So coming back to why I do this, Race Corp is a paid forward for what happened to me. I believe everyone needs a second chance, and everyone needs a team of people around them to get them through. It's not about money.
So if someone's listening to you now and they hear that story and they're very inspired by it, and they want to get their business up and going, and perhaps they've already started it, but it's not been very successful, and it's not working for them right now, but they believe in it and they know why it's going to work, and they can explain that to you and they have a plan. How do you help them? I mean, what do these people just send you an email? How does it usually work?
Yeah, so they would apply, and I'll give that address just now if you allow
me. Let me be frank about this. Alon and I are looking for really smart, really entrepreneurial, forward-thinking, bright people who have the ideas that will take this country forward, and we want to give you a chance to make that happen. And we'll combine all your experience with the number of smart people we know listen to us, and see what we can create to drive the economy forward. But to go back to your question.
I just want to ask quickly before we do that. You said the second time he invested in you by giving you people instead of money. What was it, the hot dog business again?
Yes, same business. I opened up at the Pavilion Shopping Center in Westville at the time, 52 square meter little store. And that little hot dog store did 3 tons of 80-gram sausages a month. I mean, people were queuing on Saturdays and Sundays. It was such an incredible experience. I mean, certainly just relatively speaking, it wasn't a lot of money, but it was success. And that's the addiction. Many of the entrepreneurs are listening today will understand that it doesn't matter whether it's 1,000 rand that you're making or 1 million rand that you're making. It's the feeling that I came up with this idea. It's working. Oh my God. How did that happen? And then that's the addiction.
And ultimately, what, did you open up more of them and
sell the business? The story goes into a violent moment again straight after that. I sold, and I shouldn't have. And I went into the vehicle security industry as a marketing director, and I sold Gearlocks. Okay, I was the marketing director. But for 7 years, I hated that business. I was selling fear. But I was very good at it. I could sell. And I was this young guy talking to these dealer principals who were in their 40s, that, you know, they were old and I was young, and they couldn't understand how this young guy was so confident in speaking to these guys. And I just didn't have in my mental model wasn't that they were better than, they were equal. And I think that came across. And so I became very successful at that. But I made a big mistake in that business, which was that I didn't the finance I left to somebody else. We didn't do so much credit checks. We didn't collect the money. We were always battling. And then I go to my mentor and I say, could you second old Negative Ned to this business, because you know, I'm the marketing guy, you know. And he looked at me and he says, well, change your title and do it yourself. So that was a huge lesson for me, that as an entrepreneur, you take responsibility for everything.
Yeah.
It's not just whatever title you've given yourself. So that 7-year period was such a phenomenal time for me to learn the hard lessons of building a bigger business. So I didn't go to the New York Sausage Factory, no.
So, Alon, what kind of people are we looking for here?
So I think, given your expertise in media, I think new media, digital media, new media, social media, anything where your value, because if we go back to the story about the people around you, in what we're discussing, you would be one of those people, and you'd bring your networks, your expertise, you know, all your failures in the past, mm-hmm. to, you know, all the precious lessons from those to bear. I'm more of a generalist, so I would bring that and plus the rest of Raise Corp to bear. So we're looking for, I don't even say young, because that's not fair. I think anyone who's got currently got a business or got a business idea in new media, I would say for now based in Gauteng, because we want to start this where you and I are both based, where we can have the most influence. And someone who's got an idea that we can scale, something really seriously at the edge. So I'm not looking for a website company, you know, somebody who can build websites. There's a dime a dozen. We're looking for something really, really special where, in your opinion, you're not getting the traction you should, but know it can. And just with a little bit of influence and perhaps money at a later stage where we would invest in this business financially, it can actually spark to be something really cutting edge and big.
So in other words, this is a major opportunity for anybody who's got an idea in new media, anybody who's got an idea in the sort of space where you can make it scalable, even if it's just slightly on the edges of media.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't need to be. Remember, media, everybody's in the media business these days because everybody is using social media to market themselves.
Correct.
So everybody has some understanding of this. No one is a complete outsider.
Yeah.
And as a result, there might be people who have technological answers to questions. There might be people who have products they want to sell. There might be people who can put a service business together.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is, if you need that leg up, if you need to, if you believe in this idea enough, but you can't do it all on your own, or you've tried and failed to do it all on your own, but you know it's still a good idea, this is where you take it.
That's right. To me, it's not just the idea. It might be that you've got an existing business right now. It's 6 months in or a year into that business. It's doing some turnover, but it's not hitting the numbers that you know it should. So I wouldn't constrict this to just ideas. I'd honestly prefer somebody who's already started, because that also talks to their character, that they haven't been waiting around, or somebody who came up with an idea in the shower this morning and now is listening to this and hasn't thought it through. The more thought through it is, the better chance it will have to get onto a program.
All right, so if you want this, if this is for you, if you can hear us describing you when we talk about this stuff, then email me. I'll give you my email address. You can email Alon as well. But email gareth@cliffcentral.com and we'll get the wheels turning.
Right.
And we'll take a couple of people, who knows how many great business ideas we might come up with, who knows how many great businesses that are already out there that need incubation and acceleration that we could put the right ingredients into and propel into the stratosphere. If you're one of those people, now's the time.
Can you describe just briefly and off the top of your head a couple of examples where there have been people who have had the right idea, had the right attitude, but some fundamental thing was missing and it was a great marriage between you and them? They wouldn't have probably succeeded without you, but what they brought was what you needed them to bring.
Yeah, so one of my favorites is actually an early story in Race Corp. There's a company called Ruby Blue, where there were two partners who had incredible chemistry. They were very different, and they had the right attitude, but the wrong business, in fact. They were selling computers in those days, and they were box droppers, you know, that they used to go and sell computers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they evolved into networking, and when we found them, they were doing a mixture of both. By working with them and their attitude, we turned that business into a software business, so that business today it's got a product called EasyPol, which, and this is quite morbid, but it has funeral home policy management software.
Okay.
It has 6 million policies running on its software today. There's a ticket. I was at a board meeting there yesterday. There's a ticker tape of as these policies are being added, and they take a clip from each one, and they build phenomenal software. And now that software is being adapted for other opportunities as well. So that's a great story about how you come with the right attitude in the right kind of industry, but we tweak you to find out.
I mean, what a gap in the market too, to see a space where funeral homes and funeral policies meet technology.
Mm.
That's incredible.
And yeah, to get there from peddling computers.
Yes. And I like to use that example because it's so obscure.
Yeah.
But it also talks about how they had the adaptability, because that's the important part of the story, is that they were willing to listen and willing to change. And in fact, it didn't even – honestly, it didn't come from us. It came literally from an accident with a guy, and then the idea came from that. But they were able to turn. And it was our support, I believe, and their genius that allowed them to become so successful.
Is it true that a lot of really great startups need more than one person at the top?
Yeah. So if you look at the theory, and I'm a big reader on entrepreneurship, and
sure.
I'm
asking you to give us the short version.
Yeah. the answer is yes, is that that teams at the top are better than individuals at the top. And we come in as that surrogate for the rest of the team.
Right.
Because generally you can't afford those teams up front at the top. So the answer is yes.
And you could help people with very practical stuff like how you do your accounting, how you manage your money. And then there could be other stuff that's a lot more obscure that might have to do with, you know, you're not getting enough sleep.
Yes.
your kids, you're dropping the kids off at school in the morning, and that's adding huge stress to your life, and can't someone else do that for you?
Yeah.
These are little things, right, that people don't understand.
Yeah. So our support is quite comprehensive in terms of we provide you with what we call guides, mentors, same replication of my story. So you'll get a strategy guide, you'll get a finance guide, you'll get a marketing guide, you'll get a sales guide, and you'll get that personal development guide. Those are a team of five people that we surround you with. And then added to that, we help open networks for you, access to finance, if we provide finance as well. So it's a very, very comprehensive support structure. Added to that, we provide learning. So we train you and your staff. We've got hundreds of training programs that are running all the time around the country. And then we have 6 operations around South Africa, 1 in Angola, 1 in Tanzania, and you can use those as bases for setting up your businesses in those areas as well.
So, Alon, this sounds almost too good to be true for a lot of people who are in business at the moment, and it's hard. It's really tough out there. Let's not mess around. Mm-hmm. You know, I started off by saying there isn't a perfect time to start a business, but it's
hard.
It's right now, it's not the greatest.
Yeah.
So for people who hear this and it's like manna from heaven, I mean, do you charge people for this? Do you take a percentage of equity if you believe in the business? How does it usually work? How do you make it work for you?
So we've got a division. So if we're coming in as partner, is it equity? We're putting finance in, we take equity.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even not putting in the finance now, but getting the structures right. So we take anywhere between 30% and 50% equity, and we guarantee that. So what we do is we say, okay, your business is worth X now. Your percentage is worth whatever that number is. If we take our equity in this, over a 2-year period, we will guarantee a hurdle. So we will say that the business will go from 100 to 200. I'm just making up numbers, whatever that is, and we'll guarantee that number. If at that period in 24 months we do not achieve that, we hand back the equity. So you are guaranteed of being worth more with us than without us. And we take that risk. And that's in writing, contractually in writing. There's some caveats. That you pay a small monthly commitment fee every month, which is really, really small for. But that is the canary in the mine for us. As soon as if you can't afford that, it also tells us something. And if you stop paying that, it also tells us something.
So for you, it's a little barometer on that person's pulse.
That's right. And that's very important for us. So that's really the deal, is that we take equity in those businesses, but then we back you 100%.
Well, I've seen your team. It's huge. How many people work with you now?
So in Race Corp, 130. We've got 130 full-time staff. So we don't, in those guides, these are not sort of older people who want to give back. These are highly selected. One in 104 of those people.
These are the best in the business.
And then they are constantly trained, so 130, and then we've got education business, and there we've got about 35 people in that as well.
It's amazing.
Just want to quickly ask, I'm sure it's all scalable depending on the business, but you talk about the canary in the mine barometer fee. What sort of money is on what sort of scale is it? We're talking thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands.
So it's anywhere between 3,500 and 7,000 rand a month, depending on the whole bunch of circumstances.
Okay, so it's not massively prohibitive to the vast majority of people.
No, it's not. And for us, it's an attitudinal thing, because quite frankly, today you talk about things being hard. You go to Woolworths over a weekend, you can spend that at Woolies when you do your monthly shopping. So it's like a 1 weekend's worth of shopping. So it's just your attitude to money also comes out in how you deal with that.
Mm. Alan, when you get someone in there and you can see that they have the potential, but they're very, they're lost. They perhaps don't have any kind of training, any kind of academic understanding of what's going on. There's no theory behind these people at all. Let's say that someone who's just really street smart and has a terrific attitude to themselves, to business, to life, and to opportunity. Is there a way to bring those people up to speed fast?
Yeah, in fact, we never ask you two things. We never ask you about your academic qualifications, because it's irrelevant to us. And we never ask you for a business plan, because that's also irrelevant to us. We're looking at you, your attitude. That's the most important thing. The program brings you up to speed. We have templates and training and models, and we help embed those with you, not into your business. So your lack of knowledge is exactly why we are there. It's coming back to my story. I didn't know how to do those things. I didn't know how to think about a market, or how to target a market, or how to segment a market, or how to position myself in a market. The marketing guy taught me all that. So we are that teacher to you, to enable you to embed all that knowledge into your business and your business model. I think the important thing that I want to say there is that we don't do in South Africa, there's an addiction to other people doing for us. So you do a business plan, there's some third party writing a document for you. Our attitude in guiding is that we are enablers. We're midwives of your success. We will never do it for you, because we disempower you if we do it for you. Because our entrepreneurs, our successful entrepreneurs, all do it for. They run their own board meetings. They understand their own financials. They run their businesses by themselves. We are not there as your other team that runs the business on your behalf.
And if you're not surrogates.
We're not surrogates.
That's very clever. I mean, there isn't a business like this in the world, is there? Are there other people who are doing what you're doing?
Yeah, there are a lot of people who say, look, when we came into this industry, there was no one really in this industry. There are plenty. You can't throw a stone without somebody calling themselves an incubator, accelerator. Everyone is. Mom and pop operations, and even bigger operations. But The Economist actually did a whole survey, and there's a beautiful one-liner which I love. It said, Rose Corp is the only genuine incubator in Africa. And that's got to do with our model and our sustainability model and the fact that we have such a high success rate in our model. And, yeah, so it's quite a kudos to be, given that label.
So, in short, we're looking for potential.
We're looking for attitude, potential. Attitude is incredibly important. The fact that
what kind of attitude?
What I call blue heart, that fighting attitude, that non-arrogant attitude that I know everything.
Yeah.
That the fact that you are teachable,
uh-huh.
That you know that you have weaknesses and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as do I and as do you and as does everyone, mm-hmm. and that's cool. There's not a defensiveness about you. And that this business is not going to be a mom and pop operation. If you want to have a small business, please don't apply. We're not the right people. There's plenty. CEDA and NYDA, there's a lot of people who will help you with that. We're not those people. We want businesses with entrepreneurs that want to scale, want to be big, want to make a dent in the universe, as Mr. Apple says.
Steve Jobs, huh?
Yeah.
I'm curious to ask, one of you mentioned an impressive number earlier as to the number of staff that you have.
Yeah.
What kind of people do you have in your business, and what do they do, broadly speaking?
Well, they're these guides, for starters.
Yes.
These are trained professionals who are the best in their business in terms of passing on that knowledge and helping talent.
So are they other successful business people, other successful entrepreneurs you get in your team?
No, they've all been entrepreneurs. And in fact, the requirement to be a guide is that you have failed and then succeeded. Because if you have gone through that journey, you have empathy. Entrepreneurs are sussed. If somebody has never been through that, the pain that they've been going through, a month end or imminent failure, they read you instantaneously. So our success has come from how we choose our guides. They are highly trained. So they're CAs if they're finance guides. They're marketing gurus if they're the marketing guide. And they've all had a business and have... It is a requirement that they have had to fail, like I have. And like many entrepreneurial stories are that there's failure in their journey because that gives them empathy. And empathy is the clue.
Jeez. Sounds terrific. All right, so email us. I'm sure that we're going to get floods of people who have, plenty of good stories and great practice in action. And there are probably people whose businesses are on the brink of doing amazing things. So those are the ones we want to hear from. If you need some special ingredient, you're just not sure whether you're going right or wrong at the moment, but you're starting. You're there. You're playing the game already. Mm. There might be a little bit of turnover. Mm. There might be some considerable success up to now, but there's something that's just holding you back from what you believe to be the real potential of this business. Then email me, gareth@cliffcentral.com. I'll pass them on to Alon. Who knows what we might be able to discover.
That's wonderful. And then we will go through a process of of selection.
Right.
Yeah.
And we'll also put this out all over social media so that you can spread it around. Maybe you know someone who's in a situation where they have a great business, but it's just not terrific enough for them or for the people around them who think that it has even more potential to grow. This is going to be very exciting.
Mm, I'm very excited.
Cool. Alon, thank you for dropping by this morning and for coming to see us.
Thanks for having me.
Always good. And what a story. I mean, it's incredible what you've managed to pull together there. And all these businesses. What's your proudest? I mean, it's hard to choose your children, right? Mm. Which one's your favorite child? But there must be one or two things that you just look back on now and you think, my God, we did that. We helped that person to get to this.
You know, when I'm asked who I look up to most, it's one of our entrepreneurs. Her name's Joy Malloy. And her, quickly, I know you've got time.
No, no, no.
Her story is a phenomenal story.
Tell me.
So she grew up in Alex, and her dream was to become a travel agent. And she had never traveled, etc., had to get a passport, etc., and she got a bursary to go to the U.S. She goes to the U.S. She becomes. She goes on this course to become a travel agent. And while she's there, she gets a call from her mom that her father passed away and that she has to come back to South Africa to bury him. And as a result, she has to then pull out from this program. So now she's lost her father and her dream.
Mm-hmm.
Arrives at Orotumbo, meets her mom. Her mom has a stroke in her arms. drops to the ground and dies as well. Oh, so now she's lost her mother, her father, and she's like all of, she just left school. She got two siblings, a brother and a sister. And now she's left with her father's business, which is the size of your, I've been there, the size of your studio here where we're in, with called Molloy Plumbing. She doesn't know anything about plumbing. She's the head of the household, and she has to do something. Through various means, we find her, and she finds us. And over a period of 2 years, she built that business up where she employed 22 plumbers. She became a multimillionaire. She put a brother and sister through private school. Her brother actually through WITS, and he completed his degree. He might have done a second one by now. It's been a while. And why that story is so important is because her attitude the whole time was, okay, so I'm given these circumstances, what I do. She reached out. She sucked all the information in like a sponge. She applied everything. She did everything, and she became successful. And to me, the fact that she didn't have 2,000 people. She had 22 people. She then became a plumber. She decided she needs to know what these guys are doing. So her attitude to me, she's my hero. And there are thousands and thousands of those type of people in South Africa. That is a substrate of South African small business, is those types of people. It's not just the Adrian Gores, who are phenomenal stories and employ thousands and are very important. But there are thousands of these stories, and those are the more important stories to tell, I think, for South Africa right now.
Incredible. That's inspiring stuff. All right, Gareth at cliffcentral.com. Let us know what you're up to, and let's see whether we can help each other. Thank you, Alon.
Thanks so much.
Great.
This is CliffCentral.com.